Chapter 10. Corporal Frank Cooper tried not to think about where the meat came from. Sitting in his foxhole during the heat of the day, he ate it gratefully, despite the horrid taste. Calories mattered. He washed the vile stuff down with tepid water from his canteen. Beside him, PFC Stark ate ravenously. Once Frank had shoved the last piece into his mouth and forced himself to chew and swallow, he licked his greasy fingers clean as though savoring a perfectly cooked steak dinner. More likely mule meat, he thought bitterly. Since arriving on the Bataan Peninsula, the Japanese had pressed them hard. Every time they fortified a new position, they'd await the next Japanese onslaught. They'd hold for a few days, perhaps a week, then be forced to retreat when the enemy broke through and threatened their flanks. It became as predictable as the blazing sun rising every morning. Frank didn't know how many men the company had lost. Only 4 men from his original 12-man squad remained. Displaced soldiers from other units, both Filipino and American, filled in the gaping holes. They spent more time and effort scrounging food and ammunition than they did actually fighting the Japanese, and every day finding food became harder and harder. Frank noticed an officer approaching. He and Stark watched him apprehensively. Frank couldn't remember the last time he'd seen an officer this close to the front lines. The faded insignia on his shirt collar told him his rank, but he couldn't discern any unit markings. The captain crouched at the lip of their foxhole. Frank and Stark straightened up a little, but saluting out here would draw sniper fire. The captain asked, "How you fixed for ammo?" Frank exchanged a glance with Stark before he answered, "I've got 12 rounds for the Springfield and 2 magazines for the Thompson." He pointed at the 3 Arisaka rifles leaning between them. "The Jap rifles each have 1 clip, so 15 rounds." After a pause, he added, "Sir." Stark spoke up. "I've got 10 rounds left, sir." The captain pondered the numbers as though they might matter. It irritated Frank. The officer finally said, "We'll get resupplied soon enough, men." Frank couldn't keep the bitter laugh from escaping. The officer's eyes went to slits and his eyebrows knit together. "Did I say something funny, Corporal?" Frank shook his head and shaded his eyes from the sun beating down on his bare skin. "No, sir. Just been hearing that same old song and dance for months now. To tell you the truth, I think it's a load of crap. They wouldn't abandon us out here. I can assure you, help's on the way," the captain said with conviction. Images of men dying horribly, and countless faces of enemy soldiers he'd shot, and sometimes stabbed with his bayonet, filled Frank with an overwhelming sickness. He wanted to vomit, but forced himself to keep his food down. Even the act of vomiting could lead to his death out here. Keep the calories on the inside. What right did this son of a bitch have to give the men false hope? He fought the urge to grip the officer by the throat and choke the life out of him. The captain looked alarmed and pulled away a few inches. Frank uttered, "Yes, sir. I hope you're right." The officer slapped his shoulder before he stood. He looked around at the other foxholes. A few GIs watched him warily. "Where's your squad leader, Corporal?" Frank raised his voice. "Get down, sir. There are Jap snipers all over the place." The officer looked down at him as though he'd stepped in dog shit. Frank pointed. "Over there. Sergeant Williams is over that way." The officer looked that way, nodded, and strode away as though on a Sunday stroll. "Thank you, Corporal," he said. Frank and Stark watched him go. Stark gave a low whistle and pushed his hat back from his forehead. "How is that son of a gun still alive?" "No idea. I've never seen him before. I wanted him out of here as fast as possible. Stupid son of a bitch is going to get someone killed. Walking around like that. He's a bullet magnet." "You think he's right about the relief convoy?" "No, and saying so only makes things worse. Gives the men false hope."
"You think it's hopeless, then?" Stark asked just above a whisper.
"There's always hope. I just don't think it'll come in the form of a relief convoy."
"How will it come, then?" Frank pondered his answer. I think we can hope to survive the war, but that's all. And even that's a slim hope.
You mean as POWs?
Well, we sure the hell ain't gonna win this battle. Only a matter of time. Maybe they'll manage to get some of us off. I've heard about submarines and those fast PT boats getting in and out at night.
Yeah, maybe, Frank said with little conviction.
A few minutes later, Sergeant Williams emerged from his foxhole and, staying as low as possible, came to the edge of their foxhole.
That crazy Captain Yates wants you to follow into the CP, Cooper.
Frank looked confused.
Yates? Why?
My unit's here. Says he needs an assistant.
That's if you can drive a Jeep okay.
I'm not a driver. Besides, I haven't seen an operable vehicle in weeks. Williams' face contorted angrily.
Take the job, Corporal. It might be your ticket out of here. At least it'll get you off the front lines for a while.
Frank glanced at Stark. He gave Frank a sheepish grin. Leaving doesn't feel right, Frank said.
For Christ's sake, Frank! There's no right and wrong out here anymore. Survival's the only thing that matters now.
Long seconds passed between them. Williams finally added,
See if you can get us more ammo and food. I just know those rear area boys are hoarding stuff back there.
Frank nodded, but knew once he left, he'd probably never return. The battlefield situation was simply too confused and fluid. He shook his head and said,
This place just gets crazier every day. I don't even know who that guy is.
He shook each of their hands, knowing he may never see them again. He gathered what little gear he had left. He kept his Springfield and left the Thompson and the two magazines for Stark and Williams. He considered saying goodbye to the other men, but thought it would only depress them even more. He hopped from the foxhole and muttered, That crazy bastard will probably get me killed. Without looking back, he found his way to the temporary platoon CP. Even moving a couple of hundred yards from the front felt like going on holiday. He felt the mood shift noticeably. Captain Yates waved as he approached and directed him to an idling jeep. Lieutenant Blunt, leader of the 4th platoon, watched him with a withering stare. Frank gave him a questioning look, but Blunt waved him off. Frank didn't blame him for being angry. He needed every man on the line.
Yates slid into the passenger seat and asked, You can drive one of these, right?
Sure thing, sir. Piece of cake. But where'd you get the fuel?
Yates' youthful face turned hard.
Keep the questions to a minimum and we'll get along fine, Corporal Cooper. Is that clear?
Crystal clear, sir.
Head south. I need to be in Maravellas by 8 o'clock tonight.
Maravellas? At the tip of the peninsula, sir?
That's right. You got a problem with that, Corporal?
No, sir. Just the end of the line is all.
Not quite, he said. Now move out!
Sean Cooper walked with Maxwell and a few other paratroopers. They'd been given the day off and wanted to see some of the sights in the canal zone. Passes had been difficult to come by, so they wanted to make the most of it. They searched for somewhere to get a cheap drink. Sean stopped and couldn't believe his eyes. The woman he'd met a few days before sat, sipping a drink and reading a newspaper while sitting on a bench beneath a shade tree. He recognized her beautiful blonde hair and her tanned skin immediately. Sean smacked Maxwell's arm and pointed.
Isn't that the gal from the cantina?
The group stopped and Maxwell squinted and Sean prodded.
You know, the Dutch dame we met after that damn march.
Maxwell rubbed his arm.
Ouch! I see her.
Yeah, I think so.
What was her name again?
Ilsa,
Sean said quickly.
Yeah, Ilsa. He shook his head. She's really something.
The other paratroopers saw her and a few whistled in low catcalls. They'd seen plenty of local women, but few Caucasians, and none as beautiful as Ilsa. Sean's face reddened, and he felt shame, embarrassment, and anger all at the same time. He wanted to throttle them right then and there.
Knock it off, jackasses!
The paratroopers looked at Sean as though he'd lost his mind. Ilsa looked up from her paper and saw the soldiers leering at her. She shook her head in disgust and went back to reading her paper. giving it a loud flick to straighten the pages. Maxwell explained, "We've met her before, an old Shawnee boy is smitten, I'm afraid." He said it loud enough for her to hear, and Sean reacted. He punched Maxwell in the stomach, causing him to lose his breath and pitch forward. He fought for breath and finally gagged loudly. Ilsa looked up again, and this time Sean raised his hand apologetically.
"Sorry, miss. My friend swallowed a June bug or something."
Recognition filled Ilsa's eyes. "Do I know you?" She smiled, and Sean melted. He feigned ignorance, trying to play himself off as not being interested enough to remember. Do you?" She put her index finger against her full lower lip, then gave him a wry grin and pointed at him. "Paratrooper Sean." He acted as though it finally dawned upon him, too.
"Oh, yes. Ilsa? Is that correct?"
Maxwell had finally recovered and he gasped,
"Oh, for crying out loud! What the hell'd you do that for, Cooper?"
Sean ignored him and the others. He strode toward her as though he had no other choice. A howitzer cannon could have gone off directly behind him and he wouldn't have noticed. He extended his hand, and she stood, and they shook beneath a shade tree. Her hand felt soft and warm, just as he remembered at the cantina. She looked even more beautiful now. She reached out, and soon both their hands interlocked. It felt intimate somehow.
"It's good to see you again, miss."
Her smile broadened, and he felt himself falling into her sparkling blue eyes.
"Please, call me Ilsa. We're old friends now," she teased.
"Friends?
Oh, yes, of course," he said, with some disappointment seeping through.
"You don't want to be friends with me?" she asked.
He blushed deeply. Now he noticed the other paratroopers watching. If he backed down now, he'd never hear the end of it, particularly once Corporal Maddox heard about it. He ignored the butterflies in his chest and said,
"I'd like to be more than friends."
Encouraged that she didn't immediately turn him away, he continued,
"Could I take you on a date?"
She gave him a sultry look, which made his knees go weak. She leaned in closer and said,
"I'd like that, Sean."
The paratroopers broke into raucous cheers and whistles, and Sean gave them a withering look, but it only made it worse. He looked back at Ilsa.
"Sorry about them. They, well, they're my friends."
She looked at them and blew a kiss their way. She raised her voice and said,
"Now, now, get control of yourselves."
She pulled a slip of paper and a pencil from her bag and wrote something, then handed it to Sean.
"Here's my address. When would you like this date to happen?"
Sean looked at it as though it was made of pure gold. He said,
"Would tonight be too soon? I only have 24 hours before I have to report back in."
8 o'clock?
She suggested.
"Yes, that'll be fine."
He looked embarrassed.
"I don't have a car or anything."
"That's fine. We'll walk.
There are plenty of spots within walking distance." He tried to wipe the goofy smile off his face, but couldn't quite manage it. He held up the scrap of paper and said,
"See you at 8, then."
He returned to the group. They hooted and hollered. Maxwell wrapped his arms over his shoulders, and they walked down the street like conquering soldiers. Through a side window, Ilsa saw Sean coming to the door. He wore a uniform that looked far too heavy for the warm weather. She couldn't help laughing, seeing him struggling to tighten his tie while sweat dripped off his chin and nose. She pulled away from the window before he could see her and waited near the front door. She gave one last look in the small mirror hanging in the tiny foyer. She looked good. She puckered and blew herself a kiss. "Here goes," she thought. The knock on the door startled her, even though she expected it.
"Why am I so jumpy?" she wondered.
She went to the door and opened it. Sean stood there, sweating. He smiled and pulled a wilted bouquet of flowers from behind his back. They draped over his hands as he extended them to her.
"These are for you."
She smiled and took the pathetic mass of dying flowers.
Thank you, Sean.
They're lovely, she lied. They've wilted a bit. I've been wandering the streets for a while. Guess they don't like the heat. She covered her mouth, trying not to laugh.
How long have you been wandering the streets?
Oh, it's no problem. The streets aren't labeled like I'm used to back home. There are a lot of dead ends, too.
How long? She persisted.
About 2 hours.
Is that wool?
He looked at the coat he'd put on a few minutes before knocking on her door. I think so. Yes.
Well, take it off immediately. You look ready to drop.
He swayed, and the color in his face changed from bright red to pale white.
Oh, that's okay. I'm fine. I'll just...
She dropped the flowers and caught him as his eyes rolled to the back of his head and he tilted forward like a tree being felled in the forest. She rotated him, surprised at his weight, and laid him on his back. She pulled him into the coolness of her living space and shut the door. She lightly slapped his face, but he didn't respond. She struggled to get the ridiculous wool coat off. Once she did, she didn't stop there. She undid his tie and unbuttoned his shirt, exposing his chiseled chest. She pretended his body didn't make her a little giddy. She propped books beneath his feet and fanned his face. His eyes finally flickered open. He looked confused, then mortified as he realized what had happened. He tried to sit up.
Oh, my God. Did I pass out?
She placed a hand on his shoulder.
It's okay, Sean.
Yes, you did. She passed him a glass of water.
Here, drink this.
He gulped it down, and she watched the color coming back to his handsome face. He looked at his open shirt, then took in his surroundings.
Your place?
He asked.
Yes. I caught you and pulled you out of the heat. Why would you wear that silly wool coat? Your uniform isn't what you normally wear. It's far too heavy for the conditions. I wanted to look.
He stopped and rubbed his forehead.
Oh, jeez, I've really screwed this up,
he said in a whisper.
No, you haven't. We'll stay in for a while. No need to rush. You must still feel awful.
Sean's expression looked pained.
I can't believe I passed out. All those days in the Georgia heat, running countless miles, millions of push-ups, all of it in heat as bad as this, and I never once passed out.
She couldn't keep from laughing. He stared at her, and she finally contained herself and said,
I'm sorry to laugh, but your face, when you were standing at the door with those poor flowers, sweat streaming off your face, trying to look like you weren't miserable, then you just toppled over like a giant tree.
He grinned and shook his head. I guess I am a bit overdressed for the conditions. She couldn't contain the laughter any longer. He laughed too, and his chortling made her laugh even harder. It felt good and natural, and soon they both lay side by side laughing. She finally wiped her eyes and sat up. He did too, and their eyes met for a long moment. She suppressed the urge to kiss him. She scolded herself. Don't make this something it's not. She tore her eyes away and stood. He got to his feet slowly, testing his balance. He slowly buttoned his shirt and said,
I think I'm okay to go out to dinner now.
She suggested,
Why don't we stay in? I've got plenty of food, and we can talk without being interrupted all the time.
His face reddened as though she'd suggested something completely different.
He is very young, she reminded herself.
He said, Okay, if that's what you want.
Yes, I'd like that very much. Would you like something stronger than water?
That'd be swell, he said. She cooked for him while he sipped on a cold beer. He nursed it, and she figured he didn't want to make an ass out of himself again. They talked, and she immediately felt comfortable with him. He obviously felt the same way, and their conversations felt easy and delightful. She served him a fabulous meal full of brightly colored vegetables and savory, thinly sliced meat, all while engaging in light, fun conversation. She loved the way he reacted to the new savory tastes. Some men shied away from new things. He seemed to relish them. He finished his food, leaned back, and rubbed his belly. "You're an incredible cook, Ilsa." She smiled and said, "Thank you. You're a wonderful conversationalist." She stood and strode to the deck. "I love the night air here." He followed her, and she noticed him ogling her backside. "Good," she thought. She stepped to the railing, and she felt him come up behind her. She reached out her hand, and he took it. She could feel his sweaty palms and realized he must be nervous. She turned so they faced each other. She looked up into his sparkling blue eyes. "He is devilishly handsome," she thought. She leaned into him, and they kissed. His lips felt hot and soft, and she pushed into him, almost losing control of herself. She felt his tongue slither into her mouth. She met his with hers, and the sensations coursing through her body felt like undulating waves. She finally pushed him away gently. Her breaths came in quick gasps, the same way his did. "I had fun tonight, Sean." He leaned in to kiss her again, but she pushed back. He asked, "Is there something wrong?" She placed her hand on his muscular chest. She shook her head and said, "No, nothing. Let's do this again." She heard the disappointment in his voice. "Okay. I'd like that very much." She escorted him to the front door. He turned, and she desperately wanted to take him in her arms and lead him back into the bedroom. But she restrained herself. "Not yet." She put her finger on his lips and said, "I'll see you soon, Sean." He kissed her finger and nodded. "Yes, I hope so." He went down the stairs and turned around. "Thank you for dinner, Ilsa. It was amazing." She smiled and blew him a kiss, then closed the door. She pressed her back to the door and bit her lower lip. She heard him whoop, and she couldn't stop smiling. A week later, Sean Cooper opened his eyes but wished he hadn't. Sunlight pierced into his brain like shards of glass, and his head throbbed as though it were being crushed between a vise. He shifted in an effort to turn away from the light. He heard glass bottles clang and roll into one another. They had given him and his squad a 2-day pass in the Panama Canal Zone. He'd wanted to spend the time with Ilsa, but his squad mates never gave him the chance to break away. He sat up painfully and rubbed his forehead. His mouth tasted as though one of the local monkeys had used it for a toilet. Through bleary eyes, he scanned the porch. 4 other paratroopers lay about in various positions. None looked comfortable. The smell of vomit wafted past his nose, and he immediately felt sick. Had he thrown up? He didn't think so, but he couldn't be sure. The way his mouth tasted, it wouldn't have surprised him. He got to his feet and swayed. He went to the edge of the porch and leaned on the railing. He looked down at the beach leading to the sparkling sea. That's what he needed. The short set of stairs leading off the porch seemed to be a mile away. He lifted a leg and straddled the railing. He leaned forward, trying to lift his other leg, but his foot caught, and he fell the 4 feet to the sand. He landed softly and rolled a few feet. The fall didn't do his head any favors. He spit sand, then lay there with his eyes shut and thought he'd just take a quick cat nap. The sun baked his bare chest and exposed legs. He woke with a jolt. How long had he slept? Not long. Still morning. He remembered the sea. He rolled to his feet and took a few steps toward the blue waters of the ocean. With each step, the beach sloped more severely. He couldn't keep his body from outdistancing his legs, and he ended up running to keep from tumbling. He crashed headlong into the sea and submerged. The coolness enveloped his body, and he immediately felt better. He opened his eyes and took in the greens and blues of the underwater world. Flashes of silver fish darted here and there, probably hoping he'd give up some chum. He surfaced and allowed his body to float on the buoyant salt water. Tiny waves lapped at his sides and caressed his temples. He drifted, never wanting the sensation to end. Thoughts and memories from the previous night played like a movie in his head. An image of the most beautiful woman he'd ever seen lit up his mind in a flash. He jolted upright and looked back toward the house he'd come from. Ilsa, he remembered. She had been there last night. He panicked for an instant, hoping he hadn't made a fool of himself. He remembered more now. She'd insisted he spend time with his paratrooper buddies last night instead of just her. She'd been more like a pal than a girlfriend. At first, the others were standoffish. They didn't know why this older beauty would hang around young paratroopers. She had a noticeable accent, and he remembered her telling those that had asked about her Dutch background. After a few drinks, everyone loosened up, and she'd fit in marvelously. He remembered feeling insanely jealous at the leers she received when the paratroopers didn't think she'd notice. That had been why he'd drank too much. As though I need a reason, he thought with an inner chuckle. She'd drank sparingly. He wondered what she'd be like after a few more. He couldn't shake her image from his mind now. Where had she gone? He had to find her. Perhaps she still slept somewhere inside the shabby beach house the paratroopers had rented for the weekend. What if she's sleeping with another paratrooper? The thought of her entangled with Stuart Blake or Vern Truby turned his stomach. His fears disappeared an instant later when he saw her striding down the beach toward him, waving. "There you are," she called. With his hangover forgotten, he swam to shore, but before he could stand, she untied the silky ribbon holding her light smock in place and shrugged it off her shoulders. He stopped and stared, wondering for an instant if she would bear all. He felt an instant erection, and he knew he wouldn't be able to leave the sanctuary of the water any time soon. Beneath the smock, she wore a blue two-piece bathing suit. He couldn't take his eyes from her taut midriff and long, tanned legs. His mouth dropped open the same way it had when he'd first glimpsed her in the cantina a few weeks ago. His opinion of her only improved, and so did his erection. She stopped at the edge of the lapping water and opened her mouth, mimicking his own look. Sean snapped his mouth shut and his face reddened. "How's the water?" she asked with a happy lilt. He tried to answer, but his voice caught, and he mimicked coughing to cover it up. She held out a hand for him to escort her in, but he remembered his erection. She'd notice it immediately, and that would be the end of that. The dates he'd been on had been wonderful, but so far nothing but heavy petting had occurred. He waded in as close as he dared and reached for her, but he was still 10 feet out. She laughed, and the sound mixed with the lapping waves. He thought it the most wonderful sound he'd ever heard. "Come here, you," she said with more force. "I want to tell you something." He took another step, but stopped and looked down at his dilemma just beneath the surface. Could she see it even then? He cursed his member, hoping his negative thoughts would squelch the thing, but nothing worked. Full salute. She took a long look at his lithe chest and rippling arm muscles. Her gaze stopped at his waist level. Her smile turned devilish. She opened her sensual lips and licked them seductively. She extended her finger and motioned him slowly. "Come here, big man. I want to get a closer look at you." As though being reeled in by a relentless angler's line, he stepped toward her. His member threatened to push through his cotton swim shorts. She didn't take her eyes off him, and when he was close enough, she touched his most sensitive part, and his body shivered and quaked involuntarily. She wrapped her arms around his neck and pulled him closer. Sensation swept through Sean like he'd never felt or even imagined before. Their lips touched, and he transported to a place of infinite beauty and warmth. She pushed him into the water a few more feet until they stood waist deep. Again, her hand went to his member, and he nearly lost control of his mind and body. Ilsa wove her way through the bustling city, thinking about Sean Cooper. She hadn't intended to seduce the poor boy that day, but her lust got the better of her when she saw his body and his obvious response to her own body. She simply lost control of herself. She stopped a block from the bar where Carlos waited for her. She pushed thoughts of Sean and their lovemaking into a corner of her mind and focused on the task at hand. She pulled her bland-colored hat lower and waved a fan at her face. She pretended to read the newspaper, but her eyes searched for anything unusual. None of the passers-by looked suspicious. No one had suddenly stopped when she'd stopped. In fact, no one seemed to take any interest in her at all. She wore baggy, nondescript clothes and hid her flowing blonde hair beneath her hat. Convinced that no one followed her, she stepped from the shade and joined the throngs of people on the street. After a few quick and unexpected turns, she finally made it to the back door of Carlos's bar. With a last look around, she entered the bar's back room. The smell of spilled beer and hard alcohol made her crinkle her nose. She hated the smell. It reminded her too much of her parents. She wondered how her father and mother fared in Germany. They must be overjoyed. The Nazi Party had swept through Germany. They would be at the forefront of the social scene in Berlin. She imagined them attending Nazi functions, the walls adorned with swastika flags and paintings of Herr Hitler. She wondered if she'd ever see them again. She hoped so, but doubted it. And under what terms? She stepped through the back room and entered the main bar area. Carlos didn't look up from cleaning his beer glasses. In the far corner, his 12-year-old son swept the floor with an old broom. "Looks like you did well last night," she said, noting the mess left by unruly patrons.
"Yes, we missed you,"
Carlos said with a hint of anger.
"I had other business to attend to."
"The paratrooper,"
he stated matter-of-factly.
"You had me followed?"
she asked with alarm. He stopped cleaning the glasses and stacked them beneath the counter. He ignored the question.
"You must be more careful, Ilsa. Cavorting with American paratroopers doesn't help our mission."
"Our mission?" she asked pointedly. "This is my mission, and I'll go about it my way. You're just in it for the money."
He shrugged.
"If we're caught, I will receive the same punishment as you."
"Don't be absurd. Perhaps a fine, nothing more. And you've already made far more money than any fine you'd receive. Besides,
he's harmless. He's not a threat to anything we're doing."
He slammed a glass down hard, making the boy startle and stare for a moment. Carlos blurted,
"It's careless. There's nothing to gain, but you do it anyway. It's not good business."
"Any word on the shipment?"
she asked, ignoring his outburst. He glanced at his son, who'd resumed his work. Carlos lowered his voice.
"Yes, they'll arrive in 10 days.
He pulled a slip of paper from his filthy apron and handed it to her. "The ship's name." She read it and tore it up into tiny pieces, which she stacked on the bar.
"Excellent. The same captain as last time,"
she said as she pulled an ornate lighter stamped with an eagle and lit the tiny pile on fire. Carlos looked annoyed, but the paper burned quickly to ash, and she pushed it to the floor with a puff of breath.